Blog Talk Radio. But you know, the most difficult pathway, or the most, probably has the most difficult religion to work with, is Buddhism. And I've talked about this in a number of times, and perhaps the most significant, and I hope to be bringing up a few more books on this and topics in the near future, on Buddhism, karma, and spiritual paths that we all follow, or some of us follow. But the essence to tonight's program, which is believing the unbelievable, takes me back to the series that I did, probably, I don't know about how many shows it was, I forget now, probably at least a dozen, probably almost 20 programs dealing with the Agni Yoga series, which is a description written by, or it's a work written by ascended masters, gurus, if you will, masters of yoga, and it's called the Agni Yoga, which is the initiate, the yoga initiate, and it's describing in that entire work describes the calling that you receive, the enlightenment that you inherently know, but at the same time, it has 13 books, which the books of include the hierarchy, and includes the mundane, existence, and I don't have it here, but I mean, I'm not going to really go through that, but I'm making reference to it tonight because, in essence, what that work states is the it explains the order, if you will, of the universe, and how humanity is involved in that universal consciousness, but how we are an evolving species. We're evolving into that, and thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of years it's taken us to reach the level we're at now, technologically and so forth. And Dilithi Agni Yoga was comprised, these books were written in the 1900s, actually, in the 1930s, when they were compiled by the Theosophical Society. Based upon very, very ancient texts, Tibetan and Buddhist texts, and it was channeled. Works were written by masters, by ascended masters, and channeled through different initiates, or initiates, if you will, or channelers, people who are spiritually linked. And so the premise itself to many is unbelievable. The concepts are, to so many are unbelievable. But our concepts as a Western culture are so alien and unbelievable to the Eastern cultures, in that, so we're, in order for us to communicate, translate and understand the values and principles and concepts of Eastern philosophy, which is far, far more ancient, more studied, more concerted than the Western philosophy. Western philosophies are new. I mean, in 2,000 years, you know, they're virtually in the making. You know, Christianity and Islam and so on. These concepts are new, whereas the other concepts, which is, you know, and they only encapsulate about one third, less than a third of the world, you know, believes in Christianity, or believes in you know, in Islam, but the rest of the world believe in a myriad of different religions, but one of the greatest and largest religions mankind is Buddhism, based upon the traditions of Buddha, but they go far, far back, much further back, thousands of years in the formation, if you will, of it. And understanding, like Buddha was a prophet, if you will, of that concept, of that religion. However, his tradition goes far, far back, and much further back. And discovering the discovering the immortality, all right? Discovering that we have lived many times on this earth, some far more than others, and for the reasons we come back is, in Buddhist terms, is considered, it's called the samsara wheel, or the wheel of sorrow. And what happens is that our lives are continually, like when we pass over, or when we die, we are sent, we pass into the ethereal plane or into the astral plane. Now, the ethereal plane is more like we're poltergeists, so we're people who are so, so intensely attracted to the third dimension, so attracted to their possessions, so attracted to a way of life, so attracted to things that they can't leave them. So in essence, they can't leave this stuff, so they don't. They basically, though their bodies are dead and buried or cremated or however they dispose of the body, their spirits are still entrapped into the matrix, if you will, or into the cage of a third dimensional desire, okay, third dimensional realities that, you know, have, you know, that continue to plague these, you know, the anxieties and the hatreds or the loves or the passions and the desires that we have, formulate the reality that we enter into. But in the astral plane, those who pass on and who can detach themselves from this reality, they move into the astral plane. And from into the astral plane, it's a completely different dimension, a different reality, if you will. It's a spiritual reality. It's free. However, the time spent there is, it's like being in heaven, if you will. But the time spent there is based upon the time that you have credited to your the good that you've done in your life. It's a credit system, if you will, you know, a meritorious system that all religions, moral demonic or amoral religion, beliefs, but all religions teach the values of a virtuous life, of a virtuous moral life, walking that path. And also they teach forgiveness, they teach love, they teach justice and truth and these things. But unfortunately, though Christ or Muhammad or these elevated beings, these spirits who have come from the astral plane to Earth and have reincarnated in order to give humanity a message, to or to save humanity, or to, you know, to create the spark that will allow humanity to evolve into his higher self, into the higher being. These people are, or these prophets, if you will, or these masters, once they die, they ascend back to the astral plane. And further above that, there are levels that are even unknown, you know, to the sages that we can ascend to, depending on how our lives were spent, how we can understand the powers and the penalties that have been placed upon us through the errors and crimes and sins, if you will, of our past lives. And most people fall into the category where they have, and in one lifetime or another, they have not reached the level of enlightenment. And so what happens is once they leave their bodies, they then must come back again. So they're reincarnated into the third dimension again in order to correct the errors that they made in their past lives. And but what happens is when they come back with under a cloak of forgetfulness. And this is identified in Buddhist writings. But in understanding karma, and understanding past lives. And for those of you who have or have not, maybe some of you who are listening to this show have had a past life regression, have been either hypnotically done or have been auto suggestion can create that, and I've had that experience. So the experience of seeing your past lives, you may not see all of the life, but you see portions of the life as it comes to you. And under this type of meditation, your subconscious, which is all knowing of all of your past lives, stores the information that you've learned in those past lives. However, because of the veil of forgetfulness, as we come in and we're new, we are suddenly have to learn things over again. And the reason for that is because we're taught, or whatever it is, if we were extremely arrogant or whatever it was, or cruel or whatever, in our past lives, or in a past life, then what happens in this life is we are given that opportunity to see that again and to correct that in our own selves. So that if we, and we see this, and we see this very often where you have savants, or you have, suddenly you have people who have these knacks for advanced mathematics, for rocket science, for music, for art, for oratory, for writing, teaching. They, for some reason, they have that ability, and in their struggle to identify what their destiny is, or what they are to achieve or want to achieve in their life, they have a tendency to believe that it's purely a conscious motivation that makes that happen. You consciously decide, well, I should be a lawyer, or I should be a doctor, or I should be a priest, or I should be a teacher, or I should be an executive or a salesman or whatever it is that you led to. That particular niche that you fill in life is, in essence, part and parcel, comes from the subconscious, comes from your past lives. That knowledge that you know, that makes you, you don't know why you know it, you just do. But it something comes extremely easy to you, whereas to someone else it's extremely difficult. Nobody can really understand that, except when you understand. No one can understand it from its conscious appearance, but from your subconscious, once you open up that realm that has been hidden from you all your life, your present life, then you realize why you are doing what you're doing, or why certain problems continue to surface in your life, why certain negative aspects happen, or why certain positive aspects happen. And you identify your destiny, you identify what you are. And some people at 7 years old, the age of reason, know what they want to do the rest of their life, and spend their days and nights and years developing the knowledge or the experience or whatever to be able to do that. I don't understand it myself, but I don't understand exactly why, but I do know that ever since I was a child, of maybe 6 or 7 years old, 8 years old, I always, I felt that I was always fascinated by writers, speakers, people who were had things to say, people that understood things. Not teachers, yes, but not in the sense that I was being rotely taught, but people like I was always amazed by poets. Some writers, not all writers, but many, some writers, poets, musicians. Oh man, music always had a hold on me. I played many instruments, or tried to play, I should say. I never mastered any, but I certainly attempted to play them. And these, I don't know why. I don't really know why to this day, because that side of me has never really revealed itself. But I do know that I achieve certain states of bliss, if you will, or nirvana in some cases, of when I involve myself in these areas. For instance, when I write, I can if I'm on a roll, I could write for 8 hours in a day, nonstop, till I'm physically exhausted. I haven't my body's cramped up and my I realize I haven't moved for 7 or 8 hours. I've just been enthralled in my work. I don't know why that is. I other than it's part of me. It's the part of me that needs to direct my life. Like doing these programs, I don't know why I do these programs. I have to do them. It's just a compulsive nature that I have in order to be on radio, television, film, these kind of things. Because I have to be able to express these thoughts and these ideas that come to me. I have to be able to relay this incredible knowledge that I read and that I see and try to bring to an audience or to listeners the other views, other people's views that I agree with or disagree with, but nevertheless views, interests, ideas, opinions, knowledge. It all deals with knowledge. And that's why I've broken my programs down into four nights a week, which is, basically the earthly knowledge, which I deal with constantly, and we all do, in third dimensional reality, which is politics and environmental issues and whatnot and worldly events. But yet, on the Thursday and Friday night programs, I feel that I must convey the spiritual as well as the paranormal elements that affect my life and the knowledge that I have attained on these subjects so that I can express them to others so that they may learn as well. Because unless you convey this information, then it's very, very, it's almost worthless to you. Because upon the teaching of it, or the speaking of it, or the evaluation of it in a public forum, that you open these ideas up to criticism, and you open these ideas that you have up to validation. Some people will listen and believe, others will say that they don't believe, And essentially that brings us back to what the topic is tonight, which is believing the unbelievable. I want to read something from a book that I just finished. It's called The Pennsylvanian Moonrise. And we did, if you go back to last Thursday night's program, George Dixon and I spoke with Peter Moon, who is the co-author, actually, of this book. The book was written by a gentleman named Radu Sinemar, and he is a Hungarian national and very high up in the secret service, in the secret, highly, highly secret organization, government organizations dealing with extra sensory phenomenon and UFOs or archaeological finds and secret knowledge, esoteric knowledge that has been found or is known and is translated but must be kept secret, but at the same time must be disseminated to the public. This knowledge, people must know. But the information that he's received and the experiences that he has, which he relays in in this book, which are phenomenal. All right, it's virtually impossible to expect every reader of this book to believe what he's saying. However, I find that he, in his epilogue, he explains it very well, I think. But just in two paragraphs here that I want to read, I feel explain much and about the dilemma that I face in trying to relay information, but to that spiritual information, metaphysical information and metaphysical experiences that I've had that I firmly believe were valid and I've validated in my life. Mystical experiences, channeling experiences, prophetic experiences, things that I know have happened and I can validate in my own mind and justify that they have happened, and I can justify it to others based upon proof. However, much that I've experienced, I cannot relate. It's extremely personal. It's extremely close, extremely intimate between myself and my Creator, if you will. And with these, with this universal knowledge that is so prevalent, actually, in the world, is so obvious, but it is so rarely understood because of reasons that I will explain. And Radu Sinemar says it this way: the living universe of most people is relatively minuscule compared to the vastness of the subtle planes of manifestation and the great presence of the entities that exist there. Modern man lives, generally speaking, on the principles of fear and desire, which are expressed in a very narrow sense, usually with reference to his immediate physical needs. There is, therefore, a huge disparity between his concept about the world and reality as it truly is. I cannot really understand the mechanism of my destiny, nor can I intuit the hidden nature of the plan which determines events from the recent period of my life. What I do know with a great certainty, however, is that they overwhelm me with their intensity and revelation of some genuine realities. Looking back on that period of time, with much detachment and understanding, I now realize the anxiety and exaltation of the soul I felt in my entire being. These then became the premise of some unexpected change of situation and changes which radically modified the way of life I had lived up to that point. Nothing from all that has happened in the years that followed, however, was without the fundamental support of spirituality. My specific activities in the present imply such a thing, too, as these matters are at the limit of knowledge of modern science. It is a territory on the boundary of the unknown. And this, you know, you really, I'm going to urge everybody to get these, to check out skybooks.usa, and the works of Transylvanian Moonrise and Transylvanian Sunrise. It's a series of books, and there's three and four which is which will be coming out, I believe, next year. I know they're being translated now. They were first published in Hungarian, all right, and sent to Peter Moon, who's a publisher of Sky Books, and because he was, because of the many, many esoteric titles that he publishes, the publisher of Radu in Hungary felt that Peter's publishing house and Peter would be a receptive audience in order to publish this book, and that Peter's audience would be receptive to this book, and I believe that they are. I mean, I'm one of Peter's audience, and I definitely was attracted to this book. It's well written and brilliant, but brilliant descriptions of what this man has gone through. But I not Peter, but well, Peter as well, but the Radu Sinemar, the actual author of the series, which describes his personal connection to these extraterrestrial, they're not really extraterrestrial, they're extrasensory beings, in these alternative dimensions, these alternate dimensions that live within the not the galactic universe, but the cosmic universe, the entire universe, the expansion of consciousness that that this man has been confronted with, amazingly, that he didn't lose his mind. Okay, he didn't totally lose himself, which some do. I mean, when confronted by things that you're not prepared for, can turn you into a raving lunatic or make you sound like one. But this all falls back into believing in the unbelievable. And I'm going to go to Peter Moon's in his explanation, trying to explain the unbelievable. All right, and to people to believe in it. And in his first statement, it says it all in his first paragraph. If you are walking the earth and have just finished reading Radu's incredible tale, the chances are that you have been exposed to some startling new information which has changed the way you think or challenged the way you think. Having said that, most of the information Radu relayed was not really new. It is quite ancient. What is new or novel, however, is his experience, particularly when you juxtapose it with modern humans. In other words, most modern humans are not privy to such information or exposed to similar experiences. Just as it was alluded to in the book, they are not particularly evolved, nor are they inclined to be in sync with the information presented in this book. And that's not just this book, but it's in all nuances, in the world that someone's not prepared to accept. The whole idea of this book, however, is based upon the proposition that this will change. So based upon the feedback I have received thus far, most readers have responded positively to Radu's book. There is also a minority who have issues. Some are not comfortable with the way Radu expresses himself. He's stating that if you're ready to absolutely nothing to you. In fact, it may even alienate you. And it's the same way with all truth. All truth is so extremely difficult to accept. And do we know the truth? No, we don't. One of the cosmic laws as set forth by the great masters who have identified them, one of them is as above, so below, and all truth is half truth. Because all the truth that we know on this dimension is not all the truth. We do not know. We know truth basically based on fact. This is what this is. This is how it is. You know, arithmetically, geometrically, empirically, these evidences are here, and most people say, okay, this is true, this is true, this is true, all right? And that's why you base truth, that's scientific proof. Well, not really. Not really. Because if you are given the wrong information, it's no different than a computer. If you feed in the wrong information, it'll give you back the wrong information, you know? If you feed in the information that you want it to give you, it may come back and reinforce those false ideals that you put in the first place. Because if you say to a Catholic priest, what is God? He'll say, God is Christ. You know, if you talk to the man on the street, say, what is God? He'll say, he's our creator. So everybody has their own personal God, if you will, their own personal interpretation of God. Even in the subtleties of, or in the nuances and subtleties of major religions, there are degrees of understanding and degrees of translation that have been accepted as God or the concept of God, but they're based on false facts. They're based on false realities. They're based on bigoted or biased or racist or ignorant, you know. And so they're creating myths, or they create these deities or these, you know, whatever. When in fact these deities could actually be people like us. In fact, the ancients often had, you know, regular human beings ascend to a level of deity, and royalty were considered divine, you know, divine right. That's why royalty was given, you know, they go, oh, God gave them the right. And nobody said this other than them themselves came into power and said, oh, I know God gave me the right to be king, you know, so I'm going to be king. And, you know, these are all concepts that are were through time and confusion and lies and deceit and manipulation created myths, which created belief systems, which later made the most fantastic, absurd belief systems, okay, to make people believe it's true. Goebbels, the propaganda czar, if you will, of the Third Reich under Hitler, stated that if you say something over and over and over again to someone, no matter what it is and no matter what the lie may be, the biggest lie in the world, if you say it over and over again, then people will believe it. Now, this was designed, this concept was
not so unique to Goebbels. He was the one who he exploited it the most under Hitler's regime, and identified it and had the gall to express it. But it was actually Edward Bernays, who the nephew of Sigmund Freud, who actually created the that concept, the psychological approach to marketing. Okay, he said using Freud's his uncle's Sigmund Freud's work in understanding the human psyche, the how man creates how rulers and governments have created this mass hysterias, these mass movements, these massive belief systems that religions, you know, have created this stuff. And how do they do it? Well, they did it by creating a need in people. People needed something. What did they need? They needed to believe that there was something bigger and better than them. Or they needed to believe that they themselves were bigger and better than anyone, just as the Nazis and the Aryan race, or, you know, the white Southern Baptists, you know, and the KKK, and you know, this kind of thing, you know, that they are superior. They are a superior race. They are superior beings, right? And once that's instilled in someone, in a religious cult or in a government or in a nationalism or whatever, that becomes instilled in people, and that becomes a belief system that, even though it's totally unbelievable to anyone outside of that system to believe, those who are in that system are brainwashed into believing that they are superior. We are, the United States, Americans are so brainwashed by their patriotism and their foolish consumerism and their continual cycle of insanity that operates in that. I mean, they're being ripped off right and left. You know, they're you know, going to insane wars, and their leaders are continually getting us into battles and stealing from us and benefiting their cronies and giving corporations bajillions and trillions of dollars and banks and everything else. And we all sit back and go and wave the American flag. You know, the American flag has that doping effect on Americans, and we've been trained since children to stand to allegiance, to pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the republic by which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Bah! Okay? That's our religion. That's the religion. We don't give a shit if we're, you know, Christians or goat herders or, you know, Satanists. They all pledge allegiance to the United States flag, you know, flag. And from murderers to saints, all right? I mean, they've all been brainwashed into that belief. So, but if you're from another country, you don't have that same belief system. You know, you may be brainwashed into believing in the German flag or the French flag or the Italian flag or the Greek flag or the whatever you may be, Hungarian flag, Chinese flag, you know. Everybody's got a flag, and everybody has to, you know, believe in their in their government and believe in their in themselves and believe in their citizens and believe that they have the right path, you know, whatever it may be, you know, to live. And that's totally false. Even in the United States, which is at one time they had the great dream, the great concept, the great American dream. But the problem with that dream was that it was built on a lie. The American dream for so many people was impossible to attain if they were anything but white, or white Anglo-Saxon American, Anglo-Saxon Protestant. If you were a Catholic, you were discriminated against. If you were a black or a Jew or a you know Chinese or Japanese or whatever, whatever race you were or whatever status you were, all right, was looked down upon and discouraged, and your entry into that American dream of wealth and fame and you know comforts and so on. Empire building and whatnot, personal empires, the Trump American dream, whatever, was denied to, and is still denied to the majority of Americans. However, under the guise of patriotism and corporatism, fascism that we live under now in this country, we are doped down, doped up to believing in something that if you look at it from a standpoint of an objective human being, you realize that we are out of our fucking minds, okay? Americans are absolutely the most insane people on the planet, all right? Because we have been extremely driven by our desires, by our wants and desires to become the ultimate consumer society. We spend every dime that we have to get an iPod or a new car or a house or a new pair of shoes or, you know, and we, even though we have 20 pairs of shoes, we need, or 200 pairs of shoes, we need another pair of shoes. We need another outfit to wear. We need another suit to wear. We need another tie. We need another coat. We need another. Our children need, all of these things as well. They need the best of the best of whatever we can afford to give them. But there are. But these. This is the dreams of the brainwashed, deluded middle class. All right. The poor have those same desires as well. They have no way of achieving them. They don't have access to education. They don't have access to the banks, to loans, to buying a house, to to accumulating wealth. They have low-paying jobs, a subsistence wage, like the migrant workers, or the, or shops, factory workers, whatnot. People who without unions. Okay, the unions, thank God, which are being demonized today, have brought up the standard of living, but in our country and around the world. But I digress here. And what I wanted to say is that we believing in God is a act of faith. And an act of faith cannot be based in any logical, scientific, empirical evidence. An act of faith is simply a knowledge that we have from the heart, a knowledge that we have from the subconscious, a knowledge that we know comes from something. We're certain of it. We see it in the miracles that are performed. We see it in the nature. We see it every day. We see it transforming from the poorest person to the wealthiest person. We are still, it's like God rains on everybody, you know. The rain falls on everybody. The sun shines on everybody. And this is what nature gives to everybody, but man, everybody must know how to sow in order to reap. And what problem is that we sow the wrong seeds. We sow negativity. We sow jealousy and envy and hatred and, you know, racism and bigotry, and we sow all of the worst and pollution and, you know, all of the greed, all of these things that we sow suddenly manifest. Just like, you know, when we plant a seed in the ground, we expect it to grow, and it does. And if we water it and continue to water it and continue to water it and feed it, then it will grow into whatever it is, be it good or bad. If you want a tomato, you do that. But every day, if you say, cursing the world and cursing whoever, you know, whatever, your boss or your girlfriend or your wife or your kid or your, or even yourself, you curse yourself, then what happens is that you create the circumstances, the negativity builds up, and the karma builds up, and you then comes back to you. So you become what you're attracting. You attract what you most think about. All right. There's a wonderful book which I read on the show, the entire book, which is called As a Man Thinketh, and it was written back in 1600, and it was one of the most beautiful pieces of work I've ever seen, I've ever read on this program, and it was dealing with the as a man thinks, so is he. And it goes in depth as to how a man thinks and how these things affect his day-to-day life. And it's the same way with what we say is believing the unbelievable. Nothing to me is unbelievable. Even if it's a lie, even if it's not true, that untruth is believable as an untruth. But that lie perpetrated becomes truth, a false truth, but nevertheless truth to so many others. To so many people, they'll put their lives on the line defending their belief, though it's false, right? They'll go to war defending their way of life, they're defending their illusion, even though their illusion is brought about by dementia, or by ignorance, or by massive propaganda, all right? And advertising or whatever, but mostly just basically propaganda and the manipulation of the masses. This is what's going on today. This is what we must face. But we must, in order to conquer this, in order to conquer the lies and deceit and negativity, we must have faith in God, faith in morality, faith in virtue, faith in the goodness and the ascension of mankind, the evolutionary ascension of mankind. And once we do that, once we can put aside, throw away all of our negativity, and I must say, I have difficulty doing that. I try. But I still can't rid myself of the anger I feel when I see Obama lying to me, or when I see Bush lying to me, or when I see wars, and I see Israel destroying the Palestinians for no reason. They're just decimating these people. These innocent people are being slaughtered, all right? I mean, I get angry at this. I get incensed at these things. I mean, that my country is invading other countries, killing and destroying civilizations in my name. And I say, no, I don't want this. And I vote against it. And I cry out for it. And I speak out against it constantly. But to no avail. So what do I do? I don't know. By venting my frustrations through my work, through my writing, or through my, you know, radio show,
I somehow validate my own feelings, negative or positive. And what that does, eventually, I'm sowing seeds. I'm sowing seeds of distrust toward my government, seeds of disgust toward leaders, toward the politics of this nation, toward the direction that it's taking, anger and frustration at the mindset of so many Americans who are just consumed by the propaganda and by the corporate machinery that consistently, daily, every minute of every day, in one way or another, is demanding that you buy something, demanding that you want something, demanding that you buy and keep the economy moving and get into debt and here's the money and so and so and so and so. And this is exactly what makes me angry, because I know that it's the total opposite of that to have a peaceful existence. You must break away from these foolish distractions and concentrate and understand what's really happening. And you have to make the believable, or rather make the unbelievable believable. See it. Unbelievable, to make the unbelievable, it's unbelievable to think that our government caused 9-1-1. It's unbelievable that they would lie through their teeth about the death of Osama bin Laden, you know, and not show a body, not show pictures, not show anything, showing no proof that the man is dead, even though proof had been presented 9 years ago. 9 years ago, and I read it, and I saw it, that he died back then. He died in 2001, in December 2001, 2 months or 3 months after 9/11, and that he was never involved with it in the first place. It was completely a CIA Bush-Cheney operation, all right? And that's why we are in the mess we are today. Because we were lied to. And we now know that we were lied to. Everybody knows that we were lied to. But because we were lied to in such a huge way, and we are consistently lied to by the same people, we suddenly either ignore it completely or start to believe the crap. Start to believe them. And we start to believe them and devoutly believe them so that they can do no wrong. They have their everything is right. And they say, you can't disagree with us. We're the government. You can't have an alternative opinion. You can't doubt what we say, even though what we say is a bold-faced, blatant lie. It's caused the death of millions and millions of people around the world. So, what I want to, and how I want to end this program tonight, is by reinforcing the individual's faith in believing what they believe. It's unbelievable. Trying to understand that, opening your mind, seeing the reality, seeing the possibilities, listening to criticism, listening to other opinions, listening to other nations, hearing what other people have to say, other books and writers and authors and people who talk on radio and television. You listen to many of these things, but know that each individual has his own belief system and believes things that you may not believe in, right? Everybody's unique and different. Everybody had a very different upbringing in some way or some form, because everybody has been reincarnated and has had a number of different lives and life experiences. I don't know if you can hear the background, but we're just about to have a major thunderstorm here, and probably a good time to end before my computer blows up. But I just wanted to say again, don't fear the unbelievable. Don't be destroyed by it. Don't be disgusted by it. Don't be turned off to it. But before you believe it, test it. Feel it. You have to feel it from your heart first. The truth is in your heart. And you know that. Things you know without knowing. You know, things you know without consciously knowing that they're right or they're wrong. People are good or they're bad. You shouldn't do this or you should do that. You know, basically self-preservation. But once you open your conscious mind to your subconscious and allow your subconscious to reveal to you your past lives, reveal to you your destiny, reveal to you all of the truths that you have blocked out, then you'll be on your path, and you'll be on the right path to ascension. And you will, you know, literally come off the samsara wheel, the wheel of sorrow, and you will no longer be reincarnated, because you will then have achieved nirvana. You will have achieved the state of perfection, okay? And be living in the astral plane. You will not want to come back here. You will not need to come back to this dimension. Your time here has been spent. Then you will go on to the higher dimensions. You will exist in the astral plane until you decide it's time to move onwards. Out to a higher dimension, to a higher state of being, to a higher state of evolvement. And I'll leave you with that thought tonight. So thanks for listening. And tomorrow night I have George Dixon on, and we'll be discussing the upcoming October 28th, which is the beginning of the seventh day, I believe, or the end of the seventh day, I'm not sure, of the Mayan calendar, and what is prophesized for that period. It's not the end of the world. It's simply the end of this system that we exist in, and how the world is accelerating to speeds that have never been seen before or experienced before in history of the world or history of mankind, what that's leading us to. So be aware that you are evolving. You are on a path of ascension. You may not know it yet, or you may know it. But if you are aware of it, then what I'm saying to you tonight will make all kinds of sense. If you aren't aware of it, I suggest you listen from your heart. Listen from your heart. Let your heart make the decision what is right, what's wrong. Because your heart essentially does that anyway. The mind just goes along with it. So, anyway, I want to thank you for listening tonight, and I wish you all the best. And join us tomorrow night, right here.